Facebook wants to connect you to your political representative on Facebook. The DOJ says that Russians are behind the hacks at Yahoo. And should you trust Google with your kids' information? Find out about that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1725, recorded Wednesday, March 15th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
And by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you everything you need to know about technology. I am Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. We got this guy sitting next to us. Actually, this guy, Nathan Olivares-Giles, is the newest employee here at Twit. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. I've been on a few different shows over the years, and I guess this is my first appearance as a staffer, as a colleague.
Yeah, but we've had you on TNT before.
Yeah.
In like a guest variety. And yeah. We may have even brought you on for a full episode at some point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I Skyped in. But yeah, it's been a while. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. And I guess maybe next week I'll be doing some co-hosting too.
Yes. Yeah. Jason's going to be on vacation and you're going to be sitting in his chair.
The hot seat.
Hot seat. Yeah. Well, I mean, even starting this Friday because Megan's going to be out on Friday. So that'll be kind of our introduction. Into seeing what it's like with TNT.
Tweet me the feedback. Let me know how I'm doing out there. Good and bad.
Right on. It's great to have you on.
Yeah, my pleasure. Appreciate it.
So we got a lot of news to talk about, and some of it late breaking. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. But first, Facebook and politics have intertwined frequently during the past year, leading CEO Mark Zuckerberg to, of course, spell out in his mammoth manifesto what kind of role his company plays in the realm of world politics. Along those lines, Facebook is now including a new feature to its mobile app called Town Hall that allows users to locate government representatives on a local, state, and federal level. Users can follow those representatives on Facebook or, you know, contact them via message or email them from the app, basically connect with them in the Facebook world. And I don't know, is this to promote, kind of give people a voice in contacting their representatives and making a change in their world?
Yeah, I think this is kind of something that Facebook should be doing anyways. As we saw with, you know, this recent presidential election, a lot of folks were going to Facebook to get a lot of their news. And just kind of taking that next step and being able to reach out to your elected officials makes sense. However, of course, it's still kind of keeping you in Facebook. It's not getting you to their websites and things like that. And this is actually something I've covered in the past. And believe it or not, the most effective way to reach elected officials is still by calling them and sending letters and things like that. So, you know, could Facebook become the future of communicating with your elected official? We'll see. But it kind of makes sense that this would be the next step for them.
I logged in. I use my Facebook app, and you just go to that little, it's like the hamburger menu is what they call it, I guess, because it's three little lines. And you scroll down, and I used it. And it's interesting to see because each representative or official has a different way that I guess they want to be contacted. So, like our assembly member, Mark Levine, he would let me contact him via Messenger, I could go to his page. Or
Messenger.
I could email him.
That's a big step.
He was the only one that I found that was Messenger. Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is one of our representatives. She didn't have the option for Messenger, but we could email her if we wanted to. Governor Jerry Brown wouldn't let me email or message him, but I could call him. And you do leave Facebook. Like, it gives you the number and you call. I don't think you call through Facebook, or maybe you do call through
Facebook. Yeah, so that was one of my questions. Does it actually surface like a button for call and you can just like one tap, boom, brings you right
over?
Yeah,
you could tap it, but I didn't know what to say, so I didn't actually go through.
Governor, how's it going?
Donald Trump, you can't email, you can't message, you can't call. It just says visit his page.
Okay.
I mean, you could probably tweet about him. He might retweet you.
Yeah.
Could happen.
Excellent. I mean, apparently going through this, you had to enter your address, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order to kind of locate you essentially and pair you up with the right representatives, but they say they're not sharing that. They're not saving that. That's purely just to surface the right information.
So. Yeah. I wonder if, you know, around election time, maybe midterms or something like that, this could be broken off into a separate app. You know, Facebook really is so loaded with so many different uses and features.
I know.
And you've seen that happen with Messenger. You've seen that happen with groups, and they're constantly spinning things out. I don't know if that would be like a temporary thing, but it's something to wonder if this is going to make Facebook feel even more bloated.
Yeah, it's getting a little overwhelming when you look at that sidebar.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one thing after another, super bulky. But
the other bonus about this app is it shows you which of your Facebook friends have connected to politicians. So it said Leo Laporte and 256 of your other friends have connected to politicians. So, you know, if you wanted to shame your friends for not being political, this is a great way to do it.
Well, there you go.
The U.S. Department of Justice has charged two Russian spies and two criminal hackers hired by Russians in the hack of 500 million Yahoo accounts back in 2014. Officials say the charges include hacking, wire fraud, trade secret theft, and economic espionage. Now, the hack not only exposed user information, including passwords, but endangered Yahoo's sale to Verizon and then brought the price of Yahoo down by $350 million. The DOJ says there was no link between these hackers and the probe into a possible hack of the U.S. elections last fall. So they have reason to believe that this was Russian FSB security agents and a pair of hackers. And this is really the first case where they seem to have evidence of cyber mercenaries, as they're calling them. What do you think, Nate?
I think I wonder why folks still have Yahoo accounts on one basis. I mean, you know, it's kind of tough because Yahoo has a history of not really being the best choice when it comes to security. But this is clearly something that looks like an outside attack, definitely something a bit more malicious than maybe the things they've gone through in the past. And it has real business consequences for them. So the timing couldn't be much better, though, given all the sorts of reports and things we're seeing about Russian influence in terms of cyber crimes on lots of different institutions in the United States, whether it's businesses or politics. So it's fascinating. And of course it's affecting, you know, what they're doing with Verizon. I do wonder, you know, how much more Yahoo's going to come out and say about this until that Verizon deal is done, because it's already denting a lot of the stuff that they got going on.
Yeah, that's
careful territory for them, right?
Totally. That's kind of what I was wondering, especially around the idea that, okay, so your company's been hacked, no doubt about it, no matter what. It's a ton of user accounts that were obviously, you know, that were vulnerable to this. So that's bad. But then when you find out that it's state-sponsored hacks, does that elevate it to a new level? Does that affect the value of Yahoo? Maybe it won't in the sale of Verizon, I mean, does that take on more importance, more precedence around the company's value?
Yeah, I think, you know, what matters a ton here is what consumers think of it, what regular users think of it. And lo and behold, we're here in March Madness. You know, folks are filling out their brackets on Yahoo. They're making those family bets and wagers on the NCAA basketball tournament. And when you're thinking of Yahoo for basketball, and now you're thinking of the Russian hack too. And so that can kind of take away that uneasiness. Isn't a great feeling on the consumer side. And so when that consumer reputation takes a hit, it has to have a business consequence, right? Mm-hmm. So I think these things go hand in hand. Now, what the long-term effects will be, we'll see, because Yahoo hasn't really lost a tremendous amount of users despite going through similar situations, not necessarily with Russian ties, in the past. So you know, that kind of remains to be seen, but it's definitely not good stuff for them.
When you asked who still has a Yahoo account, my mom, and she's a lovely lady. Now that you work here, I'll introduce you to her.
Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Okay. A lot of people, I know, it sounds like you really want to meet someone who has a Yahoo account. She's still married to my dad, so
I still have a Yahoo account. I don't use it.
You have a Yahoo account?
I still have a Yahoo account.
But one of the things that happened in this break-in was that it not only, they got access to a lot of Gmail accounts too, which means people are using the same passwords.
Same logins.
And so, yeah, those people that were like, oh, I'm too smart to have a Yahoo account, I'll move to a Gmail account, but they weren't smart enough to change their password.
Well, when you're talking about these numbers, though, you know, 500 million or however many it was, I mean, no matter what, out of that gigantic net of people, you are going to find people that are using multiple, passwords and IDs and all that across services.
Yeah.
And probably a lot of them.
One of the things that I really hope comes out of all of this is just more transparency and being quicker about things, regardless of the Russia connections. It took Yahoo years for us to find out about these sorts of things, right? And I think that's just maybe a little bit too late now. Of course, I think we all know, and we have said on multiple opportunities that you need to be on top of your passwords. Use a password manager if you can. Really stay on top of stuff and take it serious. And it's easy to take that for granted, especially if you have multiple accounts across the internet. It's easy to use one password, and it's tempting. But hopefully, this gets Yahoo to maybe be a little bit more upfront when these things do happen, so people can change their passwords.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Great. Well, a group of 58 tech companies, including Lyft, Airbnb, Square, Pinterest, and Dropbox, have teamed up to sign an amicus brief opposing President Trump's revised ban on immigrants from a selection of Muslim-majority countries. The brief was signed in support of a lawsuit filed by the state of Hawaii that is challenging the revised ban. And the lawsuit and the 58 tech companies were calling for a hold on the ban, arguing that letting it go into effect tomorrow as planned would inflict significant and irreparable harm on U.S. businesses and their employees. And the late breaking news is that Hawaii federal judge actually did just decide to block the ban. There were similar decisions that could happen in Maryland and Washington tonight as well. This same group of tech companies signed an amicus brief opposing the first ban that was eventually thrown out. But there are a few names that are missing here in this second brief, such as Apple, Google, and Microsoft. So
the biggies. Why? Why is that? I mean, at this point, it's all kind of happening anyways. You know, the ruling is nationwide, goes into effect immediately. They're expecting more of this to happen across the U.S. But why do you think that the last one had 97 tech companies? This time it was 58 companies, and some of the biggest names weren't involved this time, but they were last time.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. There were a few changes in this one, this second immigrant ban that was rewritten really to get around some of these legal hurdles. Mm-hmm. One of the things was Iraq was taken off the list, and there was also a removal of a ban on Syrian immigrants and refugees. So, you know, there are some changes here, but for the most part, it's very much the same. Apple and Google and Microsoft haven't come out and said, maybe because the last one was thrown out, they figure that it's not necessarily worth the time and effort, and that you know, we've been through this before. But there are genuine consequences here. Now, with the last one, Apple, Google, and Microsoft, they were a little bit late in joining.
Yeah.
Right? It really was spearheaded by some of these companies. So maybe their legal process is just longer, like going through their checks and balances, making sure this will be okay with their legal team and their investors. I mean, Apple has a lot more to lose by riling folks who do support these sorts of things than maybe Square or Pinterest do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or Evernote. Evernote was one of the signposts, and they're like, anything for some good press at this point.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and we were talking about this in our newsroom earlier, and just how short-sighted all of this is, I believe. There was a story about schools. Schools are starting to see foreign applicants go down, the rate of foreign applicants go down, and it's just an indicator, a leading indicator, but they won't really know anymore until people enroll in the fall. But foreign students don't get the same aid that American students are. They often pay full price. And of course, we know, if you've ever considered sending, yourself or your children to college, you know that you depend on the full pay students in order to get the aid that you need. And this is scary. And, the story from, I guess it was the Mercury News or Bloomberg said that foreign students, that the schools could lose over some particular schools could lose $10 million a year just on this. All told, $700 million a year. This is scary just from the basis. And then you think about them graduating. Who's graduating? What students are graduating from these U.S. colleges, what they're doing. It's frightening.
Yeah, it's a really good point. There are ripple effects here beyond tech. And obviously, for what we're doing, looking at this through the tech lens, there are real implications as far as getting the best talent to come and work for some of these companies and HB1 visas and all sorts of things like that. But this affects everything. This affects, colleges. This affects existing employees being able to travel. And tech is not necessarily just a Silicon Valley or even a U.S. thing. A lot of these companies are multinational. A lot of, Sundar Pichai wasn't born in the United States. Neither were the founders of Google. A lot of folks who founded companies and leading companies are immigrants. They have families to go visit. They have lives to maintain. And that's what sparked a lot of the protests and the backlash last time was literally this came as people were traveling and folks were getting detained at airports and things like this.
Just surprise them.
Yeah. But this probably is sideswiping the Trump administration coming into effect a few hours before it was set to actually be real and be in place. So this is a dynamic moving situation, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about it.
Yeah, and it's hard to really know how much this particular tech, you know, backed amicus brief had to do with the decision, but the timing is very close.
Yep.
Yesterday, we talked about how important pre-production on the Model 3 was to Tesla's future. Today, the company says it will offer $250 million in common stock and $750 million in convertible notes due in 2022. I will have to admit that I don't really know what that means, but you came from the Wall Street Journal, Nathan. What do these numbers mean for us?
Well, the big takeaway here is basically that Tesla is raising about $1.5 billion to basically give itself a cushion. Now, the Model 3 production is supposed to start in July, and this is really the biggest launch of a vehicle that Tesla's ever experienced in its history. The reason being, it's the most affordable car and the most accessible, and they already have about 400,000 pre-orders. Now, last year, Tesla made fewer than 100,000 Model S sedans and Model X crossovers. So they're really trying to ramp things up, and they have a history of delays. They have a history of missing their targets and leaving people who want their cars waiting. Now, this is one of those situations where if Tesla's going to grow up and become, you know, a big boy company, they can't blow this. And so last year, at the end of the year, Tesla had $3.4 billion in cash by the end of the year. That was an increase of $300 million over the previous quarter. Not to get into too many numbers here, but back then in a letter to shareholders, Tesla said that it planned to spend about $2 billion to $2.5 billion before production of the Model 3 even began. So the way the company is framing it now is that this money will essentially be padding. And so far, investors seem to like that idea of playing it safe. You're going to be needing all the money in the bank you can.
Yeah.
You got to be ramping up production here. And from the beginning of the year, Tesla's stock prices are up about 20%. They're up about 3% in after-hours trading. So investors seem to be liking this kind of play-it-safe move. Also, if it goes over well, then investors are going to want to be, you know, going to want to take part in this and have more and more of these shares. Now, what Tesla's plan is, and it's super ambitious, and there's lots of opportunities to blow this year, but Tesla's plan is really to get to 1 million cars in production by 2020. That's super, super ambitious. So that's what this is all about, is playing it safe, having extra money in the bank, and being able to finally deliver on those promises.
Yeah, not only just the Model 3, you know, it's scaling up Gigafactory.
Yep.
All that stuff going on. I think they have up to 3 new locations that they're kind of finalizing right now.
Yep.
And so they're going to need a lot of money to throw at that, let alone the Model 3.
And part of this money is going to go to building out its solar business. They just bought SolarCity at the end of last year. And, you know, that ties into, of course, what they're doing with electric cars. But that's also its own business. And they need to nurture that and grow that and not neglect it as they're trying to ramp up production here on cars. So hopefully that will help that side of things grow as well.
Yeah. Not only that, those sides are going to interplay a lot more forward. So it's really important that they get them strong on all sides. GoPro updated its guidance for its first quarterly results, saying it is planning another round of layoffs totaling 270 positions in an effort to reduce costs in order to preserve their product roadmap and maintain profitability for this year, for 2017. GoPro had laid off roughly 200 people only 5 months ago, and an additional 7% of employees 10 months prior to that. On the positive side, shares apparently jumped 12% in after-hours trading after that update was shared. No word at this point on what departments will see cuts. I guess the last time the cuts happened, it came at the expense of those working kind of their entertainment arm. So we don't know exactly where that'll be right now, but as the end of last year, a little more than 1,500 employees, and they operated at a loss of $373 million in 2016.
This is really rough. It's kind of tough to see GoPro struggle. I mean, they're a household name.
That's the weird thing, right? Like, it's not like their products aren't loved by people.
Products are loved, and their products are, I mean, it seems like everybody has a GoPro,
yeah,
but maybe people aren't replacing them quick enough. Or at least to the market's expectations.
They're too durable.
They're almost too durable. And, you know, like small cameras have become a bit of a commodity. Now, of course, we have a camera on our smartphones. A lot of people have cameras in their pockets. You're still busting out that GoPro for your vacation or you know, whatever action shots you got. But what they're doing with drones is their growth area, right? So you got this established household name. You can't get much of a better brand than GoPro. I mean, they're the Kleenex of cameras. And the future of the company is drones. Well, drones aren't a real thing for most consumers yet. Most people aren't rushing out to buy drones yet. So what is in the meantime for growth? And I think that's where a lot of these questions raise, get raised is, you know, what is this company going to be about and what are they going to deliver to bring people to keep buying stuff? And they don't seem to have an answer yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what a company always says. We're laying people off to make them, you know, their bottom line look bigger. They say they're on track for profitability in 2017. They're trying to do fewer things better. That's what they're saying. But I mean, there are a lot of GoPro knockoffs that are just as good as GoPro and way cheaper, right? So I think that's part of the problem too. Yeah. They're the Kleenex of, you know, of cameras. But, you know, if I'm going to pay less for whatever Cottonelle or whatever is cheaper than Kleenex, I'm going to buy it. And the same goes with GoPro. If they work similarly, I'm going to buy it. So that in addition to what you already talked about with, you know, everyone has their camera. I mean, our phone cameras are better. Our phones are more durable. There's durable cases. We can attach them to things. So, yeah, it's just I don't see great things for them.
It's hard to go into the drone world where DJI dominates and then watch as your drones fall from the sky.
Big
and then
problem.
Have to turn that ship around and you know, go back to the drawing board. That's so unfortunate. And, it, you know, the whole GoPro's camera, you know, side of things just kind of reminds me of flip cameras back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Where flip cameras were so, I mean, that was it. You wanted a flip camera.
Yep.
But then, you know, we all had cell phones suddenly that had just as good cameras, and you just had less reason to have a flip camera. And I wonder if that's kind of where we're reaching with GoPro to some degree.
You know, I got to selfishly say, I hope not. I like the company. I like their products, and they really did create something special there. But if they don't have that next step, and drones might be too far out to be that next step, then they're going to go that way of flip. Mm-hmm. And that would be a bummer to see.
I agree.
After the break, Google wants your children, all of your children. Whoa. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system, and it's designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires you to buy no hardware. They have an iOS app and an Android app, and then callers can reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. So Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number, and you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client won't see your personal number. They'll see your Grasshopper caller ID, so that's your work number, your branded number, and you can hide your personal phone number, so they won't see that at all. Simply select a toll-free or a local number, then you record a custom greeting. Say whatever you want. Say what you've been saying on your business line that you've used before. Then add multiple extensions for your business. So if you have a lot of employees for your small business, this is great too. They don't have to give out their personal numbers. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing, and they make your business sound and look more professional. You can set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. This is also a great feature. You can get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments, and then you can send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. So join over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month, and you have a 30-day money-back guarantee. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit. Don't forget to add that T-W-I-T at the end so they know that we sent you there, and we thank Grasshopper for their support. Parents of kids on Android, you can now create a Google account for your child, even if they aren't 13 years old yet. Today, Google announced Family Link. That's a tool to set time limits for your child, take control over the apps they download, and see how much they're using the particular apps that they do have. All this just for turning over your children's information to Google. Now, Jason, I'm going to start with you because you have an Android. You're the Android expert. You have, this is just for Android users. The parent has to have an Android phone or device, and the kids have to have an Android phone and device. What are your first thoughts on this?
Well, Nougat is required, first and foremost. That's 2.8% of users. So if you're getting really excited about this, ask yourself if A, you have a Nougat device, and B, your kids have a Nougat device. That might limit things. It's also invite only at this point, so you have to sign up for an invite. I have definitely signed up for an invite because I've been wondering why Google has not done this for years. And there are apps that you can get to manage this sort of stuff. I use an app called Dinner Time that allows me to kind of have control over my kids' tablets. They don't get a whole lot of tablet time, but when they do, it allows me to kind of see what they watched and how they spent their time, put time limits on. And it looks like this Family Link allows you to do that. So I'm very excited about this. We were talking about this topic last night on All About Android, and I swear Google does this on purpose. We talk about something, and then the next day they actually release the news. We're like, this would have been really helpful.
Good yesterday. To know they're watching.
I know, exactly. Hey, I'm all for it.
And they're quick.
I think this is awesome. But my question for you is, does this already exist on iOS to some degree? Do you have parental controls over devices like this?
You do have parental controls. It's called restrictions. It's a little bit hidden, but it does, you can control the apps that your kids download. There's also, a way in accessibility that you can lock down the phone to one app. App by app basis, like when I read this, I was like, oh, it would be great to see really how much time my kids spend on Snapchat. And, you know, I can't really do that without a third party app right now. Maybe you know of one, Nate. But like you can go through and see how much time they spend on FaceTime, which is useful.
Yeah.
Who they were FaceTiming
with. I want to know that, actually.
With. Yeah. But, oh, man, it is hard to parent with kids and teenagers in this day and age. It is just hard that you can have all of these limits and systems and apps, and your kid is different than other kids, and you have to, it's like you can say, you just talk to them, and you learn to trust them, and all that is well and good. And, they're going to mess up. And, it's tough. What do you think, Nate?
Well, I don't have kids, but a lot of my younger cousins who aren't old enough to have a Google account, aren't old enough to maybe be on Facebook or Instagram, they're using those services anyways. And oftentimes it's actually their parents setting up an account for them.
Yeah.
And them using it anyways, right? Just basically lying about their age. So I'd really like to see more of this. I'd like to see Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat following the lead here, doing the kind of responsible thing. It does, of course, raise questions for me. I mean, as an adult, I'm making conscious decisions to give up my data and share those things with Google in trade for their services or with Facebook or any of these companies. And as a reporter, I remain skeptical and always questioning, well, do I really trust these companies with my data? Am I really comfortable giving over these things? And to a certain extent, I think it's a tougher question when you're asking that for a kid who isn't necessarily making that conscious decision themselves, doesn't necessarily know the full ramifications of giving up these sorts of things. So I hope that parents are, giving talks about, online security and data privacy and all of these sorts of things that might be over the head of some kids. But the fact of the matter is that the technology's there. You're going to want to use it. When I was a kid, I was definitely using everything I could get my hands on and also trying to find ways to get around some of the restrictions that my parents put in place, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just wanting to be out there and curious. So I think it's a good, responsible move on Google's part. I'd like to see more of it. But it does kind of pose that question of making that decision for someone else that you're responsible for.
Mm-hmm. And are they responsible enough as children to make appropriate decisions? I guess the point here is that parents, have the ability to approve and deny installs. They have the ability to limit the screen time, device time, remotely lock the device if they need to. There's no real ability to lock specific Google apps apparently at the moment, but this is early, so they're going to kind of take some of the feedback of users and kind of form it before a broader launch. No kid-friendly versions of apps, although Google does have some. They have YouTube Kids, which is like a kid's version of YouTube, and no self-respecting kid over the age of 6 wants YouTube Kids if they're at all familiar with YouTube. They know it's like a limited version of YouTube.
Plus, they really
it's not real YouTube.
They messed it up in the beginning. I mean, you remember when it launched, and like they were getting all kinds of things that were not appropriate for kids, and they were advertised all over the place. Those kids, I mean, much more. Like a lot of parents like avoided having regular TV because they wanted to kind of see what the ads that their kids were looking at. And then, they thought, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll, try YouTube Kids. And it was just massively, relentlessly advertised to them in a way that, they had to pull back on because parents groups, and consumers rights groups says this is not okay.
And there will still be ads in YouTube Kids. We I mean, I'm a Play Music subscriber, and that automatically gives me YouTube Red, which is basically the ad-free version of YouTube, and that can roll into YouTube Kids. So, I mean, that's another aspect, actually, now that I think about it. I'll be interested to see how that factors into here. What I end up doing at home is probably not the smartest thing, but my kids aren't leaving the house with the tablet. I set it up with my ID, and that way they get my YouTube Red, and, you know, they can get ad-free YouTube. I should probably have a family account, actually, now that I say that out loud. But, you know, I wonder how that's going to be factored in here, because that's actually a really important thing. That's something that parents really want, is to be able to say, I don't really want my kids to be staring at advertisements all the time, you know, based on what they're using.
Well, what this could do, too, is in the situations like that, where you're literally giving your children access to your existing accounts, this might allow Google to tell the difference between when your kids are using this product versus when you're using it.
Oh, yeah.
And so creating that sort of like, you know, what are kids into? What sort of advertisements would they want to see? You know, what sort of YouTube videos are they watching? This way they're not getting it confused with your stuff.
You should see my recommended playlist on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's amazing, let me tell you.
I can only
imagine.
All
sorts of opening toys videos and, yeah, just a bunch of stuff that I'm totally interested in.
Yeah, but from a business perspective, like, this is an opportunity for them to build that rich demographic data to give to advertisers that they have on us that they don't necessarily have on kids just yet. And what a gold mine that could be if they could pull that off.
Yeah, you rope them early, right? Get them a brand affinity from a very young age. I mean, that's probably the reason why the Children's Online Privacy Protection Rule even existed in the, you know, exists in the first place. So I'm curious to know what's changed now, because Google has held off on doing this for a really long time.
Yep.
Not gone for marketing their products to children under 13 because of COPPA. Why now? What's different?
Well, they have Google Classroom, which is, I mean, they've gotten in trouble for that as well, because parents, you know, it's just the school uses it and parents don't have a say. They don't get to approve or not approve. There's no privacy policy that parents are given. They're just given, you know, here, we're going to use Google Classroom this year because it's super easy. We can share documents and, you know, the kids can, you know, work on different things. And they have essentially an email address. This is the irony that when I had to sign my daughter up when she was like 10 or 11, she wanted an email address. And I was fine with that because a lot of her friends were already chatting. And I just thought email is good. It's slow. It's, you know, you can think about
it's
it. You
public.
Can, you know, like practice typing, practice writing, have some thought before you email. But I had to lie. And I did lie. Like I said, you know, yes, she's 13. I signed it up for her. And then now the Google Classroom, part of Google Classroom, is giving kids an email address long before they're 13. So, you know, you had to navigate that like 3 or 4 years ago, like, okay, yeah, yes, I'm lying to this company, but I'm your parent, so I get to decide. But now they've done the same thing. Like my kids all have email addresses with the school and, you know, they're not the same. They're not open to everyone, but it is very similar. And I think that this might be in response to the EFF got really upset about Google Classroom and the way that kids' information was being used. It wasn't like they weren't connecting like my child's name to what they were doing at school, but they in aggregate were using all that information for their own benefit, and parents weren't really made clear on how that works. So this seems to me that it might be in response to that.
We shall see, as we often say at the end of our topic. John from Ontario, Canada writes in feedback to say, on your discussion about Google learning about, quote, demonstrably inaccurate information, it's a slippery slope that they're heading down. Sure, while most of us will say for certain that the Holocaust did happen, it wasn't that long ago that we would have said with the same certainty that the Earth was flat. To say otherwise would be crazy. While I applaud Google for taking this on, we must watch out for giving Google the power to decide what is, quote, truth. That's kind of part of the point that I was trying to make yesterday, while at the same time feeling like, you know, it's Google's service and they should have the right to determine that to some degree. You know, the flip side of that is that, you know, a lot of people trust / rely on Google for a lot of things. And if Google is the arbiter of truth, be it truth or not or whatever, if Google is the one that everyone is saying, well, Google puts this up, therefore it must be true, that is potentially a dangerous position to be in, even though to a certain degree, I trust Google in that decision.
Yeah, I think it's one that Google can't necessarily escape. I mean, they are a search engine, first and foremost, right? Well, I guess an advertiser as well. But really, what this comes down to is whether or not you can trust the results you get on Google. So if you're going to Google to get accurate information, whether it's the right. weather, whether it's a sports score, or whether it's, you know, something like, is the Earth flat or not, then you need to be able to rely on that information. And if you can't rely on that information, that takes away from Google's value. That means people aren't going to use the search engine anymore. That hurts their ad business, everything, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't really see how they escape that. Now, I get, you know, the idea that empowering one company to be the arbiter of truth is always a slippery slope. And as a journalist, you shouldn't really just be reading one news source either. You should be looking around. You should be challenging your own ideas of truth anyways. But that's simply the role that this company plays in being a search engine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that we talked about last week, they had those boxes that they would put on the side, on the top.
Right.
And to me, that's kind of, that's a tricky area to get mm-hmm. in, because it's the answer to a question. And usually it's like, you know, what's 1 + 1? We all will agree that it's 2, and that might be in the box. But it was obviously drifting into more like what presidents used to be in the KKK.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's the truth. And it wasn't. And so, yeah, I think it is, I totally get it. Like, you know, the earth is not flat, and a lot of people had to fight hard for that, you know, to be proven. And I agree with you. Like, it's a lot of, don't just read the first results, dig into the second page, do your research, read lots of different sources. Everyone won't, but they should
take more responsibility.
Yeah. And these things are really just going to become more and more important as, you know, voice-driven AI, always on,
well,
ubiquitous
yeah.
computers become more and more popular, whether it's your, you know, your Google Home speaker or your Echo or whatever you got. If you're relying on that for trivia, if your kid's relying on that for doing their homework, I mean, the expectation is that what they're going to give you back is going to be useful. So this is not just, you know, core to what the company does. This is a feature. You know, this is like what they're building it around. So
yep.
It's inescapable.
Speaking of Amazon Echo, we're going to talk about that in a second, because apparently it's great for one thing, if nothing else, pure laziness. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone by delivering seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals that you make for less than $10 per person. Every meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card. You can keep those cards and remake those recipes after the fact when you find one that's a home run, with pre-portioned ingredients in the box that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Not all ingredients are created equal, of course, so it's important to know where your food comes from. As part of the education of using Blue Apron, Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. So seafood sourced sustainably, beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly raised animals, produce sourced from farms that practice regenerative farming. By shipping the exact amount of every ingredient that's required for recipe, Blue Apron actually reduces food waste, and it makes making those recipes a whole lot easier because you just put it in there. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right. Blue Apron also delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. So they're pretty much everywhere. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. And you can customize those recipes, what you get in your deliveries, every week based on your dietary preferences. If you want to get selective, you can, or you can let Blue Apron's culinary team kind of surprise you and keep it fresh. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. So, you know, one day you'll get salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli, another day pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple. There's vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips and spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. Yes, it's too close to dinner right now for me to read this. check out this week's menu and get 3 meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. Make sure TNT's there. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/TNT. Blue Apron's a better way to cook.
I will tell you that the fans of the day are really taking it up a notch.
I know. Totally.
Today's fan is Jim Kaler, who sent us this YouTube video on Twitter saying this was taken in the foothills of Colorado, Denver in the background. Note, I used a Blue Apron box to hold up the iPad.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I see the Blue Apron box. Yep. There it is. Okay, so this is like locating on the iPad where he is flying in. They do this on TV news all the time.
Yes.
We're stepping up our production value. And there you are, that tiny little dot down in the corner.
That is amazing.
Beautiful photos.
Yes. He also says he was on TNT when he watched it from the top of Pikes Peak over 14,000 feet and also from the Danube near Serbia. So show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. Please be sure to use all those kinds of fading video tricks.
Ken Burns effect.
Yes, the Ken Burns effect. And use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT. That's how we find it.
Jim apparently only watches our show in like exotic places.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
We can all aspire to be Jim's.
It's a little better looking than my couch.
That's pretty impressive stuff.
Yes.
A nice Ken Burns effect, Brian.
Brian is a magician, by the way. He can give you Ken Burns like that. If you happen to be the lucky soul that has both an Amazon Echo and a Roomba 900 series vacuum, you'll soon discover that's a match made in heaven. Sometime in Q2, iRobot will roll out the ability to command your carpets be cleaned with your voice using only the Echo. So you can just sit there, watch your Netflix, eat Cheetos. iRobot also announced a new clean map feature that allows you to track your Roomba robot to keep tabs on where it's traveled most around your home, maybe what areas are usually the dirtiest or the cleanest. I don't know. This is laziness right here. I'm just going to sit here vacuum right now.
It's such laziness. Mm-hmm. It's like it's ridiculous, but at the same time, I really want to do it. I love that I don't have to turn my AirPods in when I put them on my ear. I just put them in my ear and they work. And this, it's like so ridiculous. Like not even willing to open your phone to press the little, not even willing to walk over and tap it. But I get it. I want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but the trade-off is that then it could be hacked and someone could know the dirtiest spots in your room, which they could use for anything.
But could you imagine?
To hide bugs in or something. I don't know.
or to not clean, You come over and your baseboards just look terrible and it's embarrassing in front of your friends.
Yeah.
What a hack.
Okay, I don't have a Roomba. Do either of you guys have a Roomba?
No.
I've tested some and I'm actually going to be moving apartments in the first week of April and I'm considering buying one and... This might put me over the top.
Are they effective? I always saw Roombas and I just thought, oh yeah, a little thing but it's not going to do as good a job as like someone actually like getting in there and vacuuming.
It depends on what kind of flooring you have. If you have like a really thick, plush carpet, it's not going to be great. But you have something a little tighter, it's actually pretty solid. Yeah, you know what? You still kind of have to get up off your butt and maybe vacuum every once in a while. You still have to actually do some mopping. But I think on a consistent basis, like it can actually keep your place pretty clean and do a lot of work for you. I mean, they're pretty great.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really do any of cleaning in my house. Yeah. We just had to move. We had to, like, it got so
dirty.
That's
how you clean your house. You just moved to a new one.
It got that bad?
Yeah. It got that bad, yeah.
All right, exactly. It's really bad. It's time to move.
Okay, I just have to say, go back to your comment about the earpods. We're now in an office together. It's so nice to have another iOS user. It's really nice because I got Jason and Padre there with their Android phones.
Oh, that's true. Oh, and what's so weird, now that you mentioned, I didn't even think about that. iOS is on one side of the room. Mm-hmm. Android is on the other side of the room. That was not intentional, but...
Well, full disclosure, I do use lots of Android stuff and from time to time, but what I actually keep in my pocket on a daily basis, my daily driver, is an iPhone.
Right.
So,
because you can't use your AirPods with your Android device,
no,
can you?
You can't. No, you can't.
And you just talked about how easy it was just take them in and
out. But as a responsible tech journalist, I try to keep my options open, trying to be testing all the latest new stuff. But yeah, I prefer the iPhone over it all. So,
well, you can get a case that has an Android on the other side, right? an Android device on the other side.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to pay for that.
Well, Tony got one, so he
still has... We need to test that out.
Yeah, we
do.
Yeah, he has confidence it's going to come out. we are so excited to have you here. Yeah. I know you're obviously a financial expert. You're a gamer. You're more of a financial expert than me. Well, let's just put it that way.
Don't tell me too high here. Don't inflate my ego too much.
You're a sports enthusiast. Like, what are some of the things you're excited about digging into on your shows on Twit?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm thrilled to be here. I've always loved being a guest, and actually be a staff member, part of the family here is a thrill. And I hope to be doing good stuff with you all in the future. Working on some new shows, going to be showing up on the new screensavers on a regular basis, filling in every once in a while when you guys go on vacation. I actually just started a podcast with a couple friends. It's called Buzzkill, and you can find it on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn. I'm doing this with Brian X. Chen from the New York Times and Mark Million at Bloomberg. And we just talk about tech, politics, and pop culture. It's kind of a mix. And if any one of us get bored with the conversation, we can literally hit a buzzer and kill the conversation and move on to the next topic. It's about a half hour long.
That's harsh.
Yeah, it's
That's
pretty brutal.
Good.
It's pretty
I
brutal.
Like it.
And so, yeah, Mark and I are super into sports, and Brian isn't, so he hits that buzzer every time. But, yeah, I guess that's kind of what I'm hoping to bring to Twit is, you know, my perspective and insight on technology, definitely interest in sports and comic books and video games and lots of different things to geek out on, interest in cars and politics and all sorts of stuff, and definitely hoping to learn a lot from you all as well. I definitely have some interests, some little maybe expert areas. But looking forward to collaborating and growing with the audience too.
Right on. Awesome. It's great to have you here, Nate.
Yeah.
My pleasure.
Of course, Nate's going to be back on Friday.
Yeah.
Filling Megan's shoes, but for a day.
Right. Because if I had a vacuum, I would be here because I wouldn't have to move, but I have to move on Friday. So
you got to get you a Roomba.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the solution. And then all next week. Awesome stuff. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT and come see us in person. Just email tickets@twit.tv. And if you want to tweet at me, I am at Megan Maroney.
Nate, where are you on Twitter?
I'm at Nate OG.
Excellent. And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett, for all of the Ken Burns fades that he did today, that one. Thanks to Burke for helping out in the studio. Wait, come back. Nice. Excellent. We got you in there with Burke Chat. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show. Do you have something
Burke
else?
Burke was busily writing.
Ooh.
Oh, don't worry, Burke. No one can replace you. No one can replace Burke. He says, and I'm no longer washing your laundry. Wow, he's got... I'm watching you.
All right.
Whoa.
Things got real.
Things got real.
Yeah. Things got real.
We need more Ken Burns to wash that.
Is there a laundry Roomba? Maybe that can help resolve this conflict here.
Yes.
I did not see that coming. But, you know, we'll keep you around for now, Burke. I promise you're not going anywhere.
Wait, was Snake going to run the prompter?
I don't know.
Or do laundry?
He's worried about something. Also, want to give a thanks to Kevin for editing the show. And, of course, thanks to you for talking tech with us today and joining us each and every day. We didn't think about this last part, but we'll see you tomorrow. This is the part where we high five. Okay.
Oh, yeah. How does that work? Same time? Is that possible? I don't even know.